Hi everyone. Today I'm going to introduce you PubCall, a system to detect and prevent carers. And this is a joint work with Engin Kirda from Northeastern University, Christopher Krogel and Giovanni Vigna from UCSB. So in a few words, what is a carer? A carer or web spider is an automated tool that's going to browse the internet in a systematic fashion. And the browsing pattern will actually depend on the goal of the crawler. So when we talk about crawlers, most of people we actually think about web indexers that are used by a search engine to make a cartography of the web, but there are other kind of crawlers. So we have, for example, link checkers that can be used to verify the validity of the different links in a website, but we can also have scrapers that are used to harvest the content of a whole website. So one could tell, if the information is public, why is crawling such an issue? The problem, beside the fact that a crawler can generate some overload or some trigger some errors in your website, the main problem is about what you do with the data you collect. And we've seen over the years more and more of this unauthorized large-scale crawling activity targeting different websites and its especially social networks. And the problem is the data that is collected that way can be used in malicious ways. So it can be used, for example, borderline cases to use target advertisement, but it can also be used to raise a competing product or services, or finally it can be used to craft a targeted attack. And a proof of this rising of this kind of activity is the several court cases that happened over the past years. So how can we prevent the crawler from accessing a website? Very early, there was the robot exclusion protocols that was provided, and the idea is we had a set of access rules that would limit the crawler to a certain part of a website. But the drawback is you need the cooperation of the crawler to respect these boundaries. Another solution would be to force the user to authenticate. And this is not a viable solution depending on your business model. For example, if I'm a shopping website, I don't want to force the user to authenticate before filling items in his cart. Or if I'm a social network, I need to provide some public information if I want to attract new users. So finally, a last solution would be the use of captchas and traps. The idea is those tests and trap are easily solved by human, but prove to be really hard for computers. And once again, this can raise some usability issues. In the end, if we abuse these techniques, we can decrease the satisfaction of the user. So the idea is we should precisely identify crawlers before triggering these prevention techniques. So why is the problem of detecting crawlers so hard? There are two facets. The first one, it's really hard to precisely identify the source of the traffic. So most of actual work actually using a couple made of the AP and the user agent strings. And we realized, looking at the data we had, that the user agent was actually highly unreliable. So basically, we are left with a coarse grain detection that has to work on the AP basis. And this comes with a price. The problem is, if we work on the AP basis, we can have multiple hosts that are behind a proxy, and you will see later on that it will have some impact on the detection. And also, like I've just said, in our case, in our context, authentication was not a possibility. And the second problem when we're dealing with the detection of crawlers is we want to achieve passive detection, meaning that we don't want to interfere in the communication between the agent and the server. So for this, we work on the request logs. And the problem with the request log is, first, we have a very basic set of information. Basically, we have information about timing, the HTTP header, and the URL information. And another problem with this kind of data is the huge amount of data we have. So we really have to dig for some like meaningful information to actually achieve the detection. There are actually already some works existing on crawler detection using learning techniques to actually extract the crawler properties, and they mainly leverage two facts. So the first one is that the crawler traffic actually has some very specific HTTP header artifacts. So for example, a suspicious user agent, the referrer might be missing, the cookies are not handled properly, and so on. But we already observe in the wild some stealthier crawlers that actually address this issue already. The other fact that this detection technique leverage is there, the traffic coming from crawlers often have like very suspicious traffic statistics. So very large request volume, a very short internal arrival time, and this actually comes with issues too. So the first problem is, like I said, if we have a large number of users behind a proxy, this is high likely that my proxy will have the same traffic statistics than a crawler. And the other issue is that if I distribute the crawling activity over different sources, I can actually stay below the radar and not be detected. So this is why the conclusion is we need more robust properties to distinguish between three main cases. So the large proxies that are hosting multiple users, the stealthy crawlers that are trying actually to mimic the browser, and the distributed crawlers that share that activity across multiple sources. So here is where our approach comes in with the pub crawl. So we started with a few set of hypotheses on the traffic shape. So we first realized that the user traffic has a very high versatility on the short term, but on the long term, it actually has some daily irregularity. Whereas if we look at the crawler traffic, we have a high stability, or on the opposite, a very high versatility, but on the long term. And finally, looking at this distributed crawler, because this crawler actually share a central entity that's going to coordinate the different crawlers, we actually have a high synchronization across the sources. So to validate this hypothesis, we came up with a model based on time series. And there are two reasons for that. The first reason is time series are a very handful model to model the traffic shape, and in a way that independent of the source of the volume generated by the source. And also, if we combine this time series, we obtain valuable information about the synchronization of the different sources. And so we leverage this model first to achieve detection using machine learning. We also complement this approach using clustering to detect distributed crawlers. And from now on, I will call a crawling campaign a set of distributed crawlers that actually show some synchronous activity. And finally, we use the feedback from our detection to automatically configure a containment strategy, meaning we're going to optimize the way we emit captchas or traps to contain crawlers. So here is the architecture of the system. So starting from the traffic logs, we extract two kinds of information, the HTTP headers fields and the URLs, and the time series. These two kinds of information are fed into three modules, namely heuristic detection, traffic shape detection, and campaign attribution. So this will be the result of our detection, and it's going to be used to create two different kinds of lists. The white list containing the list of legitimate crawlers and users that we want to let in on the website, and the blacklist of unauthorized crawler. And this list will be used as the proactive containment modules that are going to use this knowledge to respond accordingly to the incoming traffic depending on the source. So I will now move on to the different part of the system, starting with the heuristic detection. So the principle here is we want to detect suspicious values in the HTTP header as well as suspicious visit pattern in the URLs. So we started from existing work, looking at the state of the art. We picked the first set of heuristics. For example, if I have a high error rate, it's likely to be a crawler, if the referrer is missing, and so on. And from there, we extend this set of heuristics with additional heuristics that are specific to social networks. So for example, if I'm a user, I would tend to revisit the profile of my friends every day, so I will have a big overlap. On the other hand, the overlap would be much smaller for crawlers, and in particular, the sequence in which the profile are accessed is usually typical, like, for example, in an alphabetical order. Coming to the next module, traffic shape detection, which is probably one of the core of our contribution. So like I said, it relies on the fact that we have a fundamental difference between the shape of the traffic coming from a user and coming from a crawler. And for this, we'll use time series to model this shape of the traffic. So from the time series, we will extract different features for classification, using autocorrelation and decomposition analysis. I will come later on this feature extraction. And these features are then fed to simple classifiers, namely naive bias association rules and SVM classifiers. And we train all these classifiers using traffic coming both from users and corers. And finally, the decision is achieved by a majority vote over the different classifiers. So here is an example. I will start with the time series generation. So the idea is we have we generate the time series as a counting process, meaning we count every the number of requests per time interval, and then we normalize this series using the amplitude. So we become independent of the volume. As one can see, there are fundamental differences. So I've picked the first example for a quarter. You can see that the series is actually very stable. You only have a very few number of sudden shift in the series. Whereas if you look at user, the signal is going to be locally noisy. But still, you can observe some daily regularity. So every day with these spikes that might correspond, for example, when all the users are having their lunch break and checking the profile. I could have picked also another interesting cases, where the corners actually try to be more stealthy and totally randomize its traffic. In this case, still the user traffic and corner traffic would be different because the randomized traffic from the corner would be missing the actual structure that we can find in the user traffic. So to find this structure, we first rely on the autocorrelation analysis, and we compute this sample autocorrelation function. Basically, the sec represents the dependency in time between two points of the series. So you can see that from quarter, the autocorrelation is very high at the small lags and decreases linearly over time. Whereas for users, the autocorrelation drops off right away. But still, we observe later on some lags. And if you look at those lags, they correspond to half a day and a day, which is important, meaningful in terms of the human interpretation of time. Coming back to the example also of the randomized traffic, once again, if I had the randomized traffic, I would have no autocorrelation over time, so I would have an almost null function, and I would be missing these spikes that are meaningful for user activity. Then coming to decomposition, so we used STL decomposition to extract from the time series the trend, season, and noise component. The trend is basically the slow evolution over time of the time series, the season is the repetitive patterns from the series, and the noise is the residual. So if you look at the graphics, on the top you have the main time series, and the second one is the seasonal component, and finally you find the trend. So for the crawler, you can see that the trend is really stable, it's like a square signal, and actually the trend is actually the main component. It encompasses almost the whole series. Whereas if I go to users, it's the opposite. The trend is gonna be much more dispersed, and I will have the season that becomes predominant. Once again, following the same examples, if I had picked the fully randomized example for quarters, I would have a trend that is actually flat, corresponding to the average of the random number generator, and I would then have a null seasonal component, and all the randomized part would go in the noise component. So it would still be detected by the decomposition analysis. So coming to the next module, campaign attribution. So we reuse once again our time series, and we're gonna use the inverse of the square Euclidean distance to measure the similarity between the different time series. And we have an incremental clustering that's going to be built around the series medoids. And the way we do it is like incremental clustering. So we have a minimal intra-cluster similarity that must be respected and going to be used to control the generation of new clusters. And finally, to speed up the process, we have some pre-filtering to select candidate that where the medoid has a very similar statistic properties to the incoming time series we want to cluster. So to give you an example of how synchronized distributed quarter can be, like I said, because of the central entity they share that kind of coordinate them, you can see that between A and B, you have a very, very similar time series. And finally, so we leverage all this detection result to design a proactive containment strategy. So the idea is to reduce the impact of active responses of a user while we limit it, at the same time, the quantity of information that is potentially leaked. So the strategy is divided in three cases. For minimal volume sources, we are pretty sure that we are dealing with users, and the amount of traffic is that can potentially leak information is minimal. So on this, we will apply no containment. On the opposite, if I take the above average sources, there we have a mix between traffic coming from carriers and users behind the proxy. But in this case, we have already enough information to actually make a meaningful decision if you should blacklist the source or whitelist the source. And in between, the problem arises in between. There we have a mixed traffic between users and carriers once again, but we don't have yet enough information to take a meaningful decision. And there we will use active responses such as CAPTCHA or traps to actually slow down the crawling process. So the rationale behind this strategy is actually coming from a trade-off that we measure empirically over our data. So here this graph represents the potential for amount of information that is leaked, and you can see that it increases with the volume of requests that is generated linearly. The increase is linear. And also, it also represents in red the knowledge that we acquired about the source. And here it's not linear anymore. There is an inflection point where we can actually reach a decision about detection. And everything that is on the right side of this inflection point, that's where we're going to use detection. And now we have to deal on with the left side. So now if I integrate to this graph, the repartition of the different sources according to volume they generate, we can see that a very high number of sources actually generate a very low amount of traffic. And we, once again, we have this inflection point where we can say, below this point, I'm likely to have users, the number of data that is actually leaked is minimal, so I take no action. So we are left with the in-between the two inflection points where we're going to actually trigger the active responses, and the right side where we're going to start to whitelist and blacklist the sources. And if you look at the graph, so the green, if you take the difference in height between the two inflection point on the green graph, you can see that the amount of sources that are going to be impacted is minimal. So finally, I've introduced you with the different modules of our system. I will now present the evaluation. So for evaluation, we used data that was provided to us by large social networks. It contained all their accesses to public profiles, meaning that no authentication was required. And the request log contained the traditional information, time, encrypted source IP and subnet for anonymization, user agent, and so on. And the amount of data was actually huge. So we had to do a first pre-filtering. So what we did is we removed from the data set every obvious chorus that was generating tons of requests. And we also removed very slow sources where we had not enough information to actually build a meaningful time series. So here is what our data set looks like. We first obtained 5 days worth of traffic. It contained about 110 million requests, 10 million over 10 million IPs. After filtering, we still have 73 million requests coming from 800 IPs. And actually, so labeling for training in this data set was actually a bit tricky. So what we did is we used our heuristics in the first place to generate an automated ground truth. But these we know are not reliable. So for all of them, we actually confronted the result with the social network feedback and with manual verification. For testing, we have a similar data set about the same size 3 weeks later. So here are the results we obtained per module. So for heuristics, we can see that over the existing feature, we took from the state of the art, the detection barely reached 48%. And even integrating our new features, we barely reached 78%. It really means that we need more robust properties. That's why we introduced the traffic shape classification. And here you can see that we have very good classification, almost 99% over the fivefold cross-validation. For campaign attribution, we have 94% accuracy with a very good precision, which is important because we don't want to wrongly attribute one quarter to a wrong campaign. The recall is less critical because it only means that we split a campaign in different cluster. And finally, we tuned the proactive strategy and realized we could have very close threshold, 100 requests, 1,000, meaning that the impacted number percentage of IPs impacted by the active responses would only be 0.1%. When we tested the system, we kind of maintained a similar result. For traffic shape classification, I've detailed the result in more in different classes. So for legitimate queries, we have 94%. The 6% missing are mainly Google Feed Fetcher, which is triggered by users, so the traffic shape was exactly like a user would be. For unauthorized query and masquerading query, the detection is really good, even for the masquerading one, which are actually trying to mimic the browser. And for users, finally, the results are a little bit less good. First reason is the bias in our test set that was strongly biased toward queries. We had almost 800 or 700 on one side, 100 sources on the other side. And also we had to deal with incomplete time series because these sources were actually very close to our filtering threshold, so we had some incomplete time series that have been mistaken for crawlers. Campaign attribution, I've given you here a few examples of what we detected. I want to draw your attention to the last one, which was very interesting cases where we had masquerading Firefox queries, which was actually using rotating IPs, meaning it had a several pool of IPs and only one pool was active at a time. So that's why you see it has been split in 9 different queries, distributed cluster, depending on the pool being active at a time. We also try to think about way to evade our system. So like I said, browser header mimicry is handled by traffic shape detection. Like I've pointed out in my example, if I randomize the traffic, it's not enough, it's still gonna be detected. So if you want to evade traffic shape detection, you really need to engineer your traffic in a way that looks like a user. And for this, in the first place, you need to have access to the data, the user data coming from the website to actually craft this model. Also, distributed querying is addressed by campaign attribution, and if you want to try to do it more cleverly to like remove this synchronization, still you have to do it like in a way that is clever enough to avoid detection. For example, you can think like, oh, if I just time shift the different sources, it would still could be caught by use of like more robust similarity measure like the dynamic time warping. So to conclude this presentation, I've introduced PubCrawl, a system to detect and prevent queries. Main contribution is probably the traffic model relying on time series. It's more robust than the traditional HTTP fields value, and it's also much more robust than the simple statistics that are usually used over the traffic volume and speed of queries. We achieve, based on this model, we achieve detection by classification. We also detect distributed queries using clustering. And finally, we leverage our detection result to optimize our containment strategy. I'm also to draw your attention to the fact that we realized one of the largest scale evaluation of our query detection using the data from a well-known social network. And also this, the network was satisfied and this system is now run into production on their actual website. And so it's a successful transfer between academia and industry. Thank you for your attention and I will gladly answer any question.
Please step up to the microphone and state your name and affiliation.
Algis Regis, Google. So you mentioned that in the large-scale evaluation, you excluded any user or apparent user with fewer than 1,000 connections. Does that imply that a what's the threshold for detecting distributed campaigns?
Actually, there are two different versions. So the version that is we run in the paper run above 1,000 because we need enough significant data in the statistical sense to start to apply autocorrelation decomposition. However, on the version that is running at the website, we actually lowered the threshold not for traffic shape detection, but campaign attribution, because this requires less data. So for the distributed part of the campaign attribution, it can actually run on a few hundred requests a day.
Okay, so is that the lower bound before you can detect it? Anything below? So I guess a distributed campaign below that, you wouldn't be able to detect it.
So I mean, still it's like you can reduce to. So the way we reduce is until 200. So if you call less than 200 per day, then you're not detected. But still, you need a very big infrastructure to reach the same crawling rate that any web indexer would have, which is millions of requests per day.
Shane Clark, UMass Amherst. So I have sort of a related question. You showed the graph where there's this really dramatic elbow where you have a lot of knowledge about these traffic sources all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I was curious if the location of that elbow shifts significantly depending on the type of crawler you're dealing with.
The idea is this kind of shift, like I said, is just because of the you need to reach a statistical significant amount of data. So this is like purely determined by statistics. There is nothing we can do about it.
Okay, so the accuracy increases at the same rate regardless
because
you've just hit the statistical threshold.
Exactly.
Okay.
Stefan Brunthaler, UC Irvine. I have a quick question. So if you could go back to the user agent strings, I've just recently discovered that one of those Gecko strings, they usually come from a service like Instapaper. Is your model? So there are services that actually use these kind of strings that are legitimate, that are crawler services, but they belong to services that users actually rely on, like Instapaper.
Okay.
How is your model able to deal with this?
Basically, the idea, so you mean if we detect as a distributed crawler, then you need to decide if these are legitimate or not. So I guess it's up to the website to say, okay. Also, the way we're dealing with it, we had anonymized IP, but when you're actually running on the website, you can actually know the IP, so then you can contact the administrator saying, oh, I might blacklist your IP, so please respond to like verify if it's a crawler or not. So the problem we had is we were dealing with the anonymized IP, so we could obtain no additional information to help us in the decision. But I guess if you have access to the IP, then you have more contextual information that you can leverage to take a more meaningful decision.
Any more questions?
Thanks for the presentation, Yazan Boshmev, UBC. I got a question about a thing that you haven't discussed, which is false positives.
Yes.
What is the false positive rate here, and how does the OSN plan to deal with it? Because if all of the traffic is coming from a proxy and you decide to block that IP, then a lot of people...
Yeah, that's a good question. So here, the false positive rate is, like I said, pretty high. It's like we have 82% accuracy. So this is an issue. But like I said, so we manually verified this problem that they were actually coming from the fact that the time series was incomplete. So what was happening is if we miss one day of data, we will have a traffic that is similar to square traffic, and which is typical of crawler. So I would say 90% of our actual misclassification was due to this problem. And then you have to realize also with the problem of false positive is when we start to blacklist one IP, it's not that we totally forbid the access to the website, we just increase the number of captcha that is sent. So in some sense, we don't forbid the user to access the system. And simply, in between, we send one captcha at a time to slow down the crawling, but once you are blacklisted, we start to send a lot more captcha. So the drawback is, the false positive is bad, but in this case, we don't forbid the connection. We just reduce the user experience.
I'll just be out of time. I'll take it up with the speaker afterwards. So let's thank Greg again.
Thank you.